It's time for Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
Morena, Mayor Phil Goff, how are you?
Te mārie, Rachel. I'm good, thank you very much.
That's good to hear. Hey, it's a busy old time in Tamaki Makaurau at the moment. Let's start with something that's not too great. Measles, unfortunately. I can't believe we're talking about this in 2019, really. 804 cases of measles in Auckland as of yesterday. Phil, is this outbreak just driven by anti-vax campaigns, or are there reasons why some communities aren't getting the help they need?
It's not just driven by anti-vax campaigners. I mean, the misinformation spread there is unhelpful, but the greater number of people that aren't vaccinated is really about, I think, ignorance and lack of access. I look at where the outbreak is happening. It's affecting some communities much more than others. The latest figures that I've got from our Civil Defence and Emergency team show that overwhelmingly it's focused on the Māori and Pacifica communities. Overwhelmingly it's focused in South Auckland. The spike that has occurred in the last month, when you look at the graph, is just astronomical. It's not called an epidemic, it's called an outbreak, but it's a very rapid increase. I talked to the public health manager in Auckland, and he gave me some interesting information about it. This was last week. He said it's one of the most infectious diseases that there is in the world. For every case of flu, if you've got the flu, you would generally affect two other people.
Mm.
He said for measles, it's 15.
Wow.
So this it spreads like wildfire. But you know, to go back to your original question, probably about 88% of Aucklanders are vaccinated, and to have herd immunity, you need to be up around 95. And in the last 4 years, that percentage of vaccinations has slipped, and we've got to try to get that percentage up again. And that will involve, I think, a direct campaign out into those communities most vulnerable and where the rates of vaccination are lowest. And probably in our Pacific community, it's sitting at around 82-85%, and it needs to be up at 95%. But even for the rest of the community, it's still around 88%, and we again need to get it up to 95%.
Do you think that pop-up clinics are going to help?
Yeah, I think they will. And I think, you know, was it one day over the weekend, they did 300 people at a clinic. But the estimated numbers that are unvaccinated run into the thousands. And we've got to keep lifting that effort. Mm. One thought is whether pharmacists that are able to vaccinate against various things, but not measles, mumps and rubella, giving them the authority to be able to vaccinate, that might help.
Mm-hmm.
Vaccinations are free, so there's no financial barrier to it. Just go to your GP. If you don't know whether you've been vaccinated, it won't do you any harm to get vaccinated again, even if you had been.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're uncertain, just go down and they'll give you a shot. And it's not just kids. I mean, I was looking at the figures. The biggest age groups that, and numerically, that are affected are 10 to 19 and 20 to 29. Proportionately, probably the under 15 months are greater. But the absolute numbers are highest in that 10 to 29 age bracket.
So this is obviously going to be quite a big strain on our health services, but also other institutions like schools are having to cope with this. What's something that we can do, or what should be being done, I guess, to help ease the burden of this outbreak on those institutions?
Yeah, well, you know, even the hospitals, I see Middlemore is admitting about three kids a day with illnesses that are a result of measles but become much more serious, so it can develop into pneumonia. I had the figures somewhere in one case in 30, I think it can be quite serious. In one case in 300, it can kill. So it's putting pressure on hospitals. We've got a specialist ward set up in Middlemore to deal with that. But it's also very disruptive of schools. So schools like Manurewa High School, where I was due to debate last week, they cancelled the debate and they said, unless you want to come and contribute to the spread of measles, we suggest that you don't have the debate there. But for kids, if you're infected, the problem is you don't know for some time whether you are affected. The incubation period's quite long, but you can be contagious without knowing that that you've got it.
Mm.
So what you have to do, there's two things. I mean, fundamentally, two messages. One, get vaccinated if you're not. Two, if you have the if you suspect that you have measles, you need to quarantine yourself. You need to isolate yourself from others because it is incredibly contagious. Those are the two messages I think the health authorities would want all of us to understand and act upon.
All right, I think they're probably both very sensible messages too. Hey, let's talk a little bit about the census that has been in the news a lot, the botched census of 2018.
For all the wrong reasons.
For all the wrong reasons. It kind of links to this a little bit. We've been hearing about how it affects the country on a broad scale, but I'm quite interested in how it affects local council and our sort of local services. Some DHBs, for example, are concerned that the data from the botched census will reduce funding in deprived areas. So what kind of, I guess, are the knock-on effects of a census not working properly for local council?
Yeah, well, it does have implications. I mean, we're still relying on the 2013 census data, and that's 6.5 years old now.
Blimey.
And, you know, that's not good enough. There are some sections of the council that are waiting for the release. I think it's going to be in the next couple of months of the 2018 census, and that means that we have that delay in analysis and decision making on some of the things that we need to know about. Although I've got to say that our message to the New Zealand Census Agency has been very much when we get the data, we want it to be accurate. They made a fundamental mistake in terms of relying on their online collection,
mm-hmm.
and it didn't reach out to the communities. They have now patched the problem with getting data from other sources, and in some areas that data will be more effective than last time. In other areas, it's still doubtful. But what does it do to us? Well, you know, we need the data to properly inform our planning for the future. We need to know population size, drivers, you know, growth patterns and trends and all of that sort of stuff. We do get information from Stats annually on population estimates, and we do work on the basis of, you know, other sources of information like the consents for new building and the rates data we have. For strategic planning, you need the data, you know, for how you model transport, land use, population, economic development. But you also, as you mentioned in your comments, when you're calculating how you fund a region, you fund it according to the population size. So when we give out community grants, we need to know that we're funding the city appropriately according to what share of the population they have,
mm-hmm.
and if we don't have the up-to-date information, that can produce less than desirable outcomes.
Do you think that the online way of rolling out the census is fundamentally flawed, or do you think that we could be working on how that, I guess, integrates into a bigger system of collecting data?
Well, you know, we all want to use a digital system rather than a paper-based system, but the stats were far too optimistic in respect to self-completion rates. You know, when somebody turns up on your door, you know you have to do it, unless you tell them to bugger off, which is not good, and generally people won't do that. But if people just say, oh, you need to do this, today's census day, and go online, unless there's some direct pressure on you, a percentage of the population simply won't get around to filling it out. So I think while using digital, they also need to absolutely ensure that there is a decent level of self-completion, and that, you know, that may well mean, even if you're doing it digitally, that somebody still knocks on your door if you want to get that information out. It's you know, it's once in every 5 years or so. It's
mm-hmm.
It does cost money, but these stats are important, and we need to get them right. We can't afford to go through what we went through last time.
Absolutely. Another thing that they, of course, help inform is stats around homelessness, which is the last topic that we'll touch on before we let you go today, Phil. So one of the worst impacts of the Auckland housing crisis has been significant increase in homelessness. So that's not just people sleeping rough on the streets and in cars, but it can be sort of lots of other ways. What are some of the ways that we're seeing homelessness manifest in Auckland?
Well, you're still seeing a hell of a lot of people that are in emergency housing, and the emergency housing is often in a motel. And that's kind of that's short term. It's not fit for purpose, and it's incredibly expensive. I mean, the good news on homelessness is that we've just hit the 1,000 people housed in the first two and a bit years through Housing First, which is a collective of five different housing agencies which I chair. And I'll be coming out probably in the next week or so with a range of proposals, which I guess is part of the election campaign, for how we can build on that pretty remarkable achievement we've already made, but we know that that's only part way towards the solution, with a range of different proposals, some of which I have to take to government, but things that will make a real difference for homelessness. I mean, when you think about it, your right to shelter is one of the most fundamental human rights there is. If you don't have shelter, it's going to impact on your health. You just look at the hospitalisation rates of those that are sleeping rough. You know, if you're out there in the cold and the wet, you know, you'll end up with pneumonia, you'll end up in hospital, you'll die much younger. But it also affects the education of kids, kids that are transient, where they, you know, go to six or seven different schools in a year. What chance do they have of getting a decent education? And if you're living in an environment of insecurity, how do you focus on things like education? You're focused on survival. So we really have to do something about that. But you know, I'm pleased with what we've achieved, and, you know, the City Mission new building, the home ground building, is rising out of the soil, and I'm pleased that we're able to contribute towards the cost of that. We've done the new, we've redone the James Liston Hostel down in Howe Street and in Herne Bay. That's, all of that's, Freemans Bay, I should say, all of that's good. But, you know, you still walk down Queen Street and you see people sleeping rough. Now, they're sometimes at the hard end of it. Sometimes they've been sleeping rough for years. But we have to have the goal of eliminating homelessness. And I believe that we can, in all, for all intents and purposes, do that. And that's what I'm going to be focusing on with the new policy points I come out with in about a week's time.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time this morning, Phil. We really appreciate it.
No, that's good, Tess. Always good to be on the radio. And you guys have a good day.
Thanks very much. See ya.
Cheers. Bye.
That was Sounding Off with Phil Goff.